With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it, weekend editions here at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, soon to have Mark Kranak. We have made contact, and Elijah Herbel, he didn't leave. He just stayed here last night. Good to have you in. It's a glorious day. Turn around and look outside on Cornhusker. It's cold, it's wet. We need John Facenda narrating some sort of Ken the Snake Stabler 2-minute drive. I mean, it's fall football, chilly outside, but I think the rain will go away, and hopefully you're one of 4,000 today that get to go watch Nebraska with their open spring practice. We'll dive into what we're looking for, and we'll get caught up with a longtime member of Nebraska football, Ron Brown. Coach Brown, part of our rewind this morning, and 5 decades a part of Nebraska football. Coach Ron Brown, now a senior offensive analyst. So we'll hear from Coach. Next hour, Brandon Vogel will be with us, some football and volleyball. And then the Iron Horse will join us, Gary Sharp. You're welcome in at 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Give us a follow on Twitter at Schmidt_radio, Chris Schmidt, at Mark Skurs for Mark Kranak, at Herbal Essence for Elijah Herbal. You can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. Kranak, you bringing the little ones today.
Today to where to the practice
the open thing? that groan this morning was like, oh. is it a hair of the dog morning? How the hell are you?
Yeah, I'm old, but other than that, I'm doing well. And no, I'm not taking them to the practice. I think that's a little bit more for recruiting dorks to attend. Okay. Isn't that right?
I don't consider myself a recruiting dork, but I'm anxious to watch.
A lot of times, Chris, you're in denial. And
for a lot of
something
things
to do with it. You're going to be taking pictures of the next, what's the kid's, Micah Parsons, aren't you?
Sure. I mean, mm-hmm. Micah Parsons will go number 11 overall to the Giants, so there are worse things.
That's true. No, I think it's a good thing that they're doing, but it conflicts with Little League Baseball. Otherwise, probably would take them, in all honesty. It's a good thing. And why not open it up more than that? Why is that such a unique occurrence when, you know, I mean, you can always count on the spring game and then you can count on games and that's it. Mm. That's it. You do not get to see this team in really any other way playing the sport anyways.
About 8 times a year.
You should, right? Mm. Like open practice up a little more. What would be the harm in that? You often hear, like, well, you know, the opponents you want to protect. Really? Have some play?
You know what the hope is? Is for Nebraska to get back to being like the Zach Wiegert Nebraska squads, where this has always been hilarious, and I wish there was audio of it. I wish there was a mic'd up version of the 1994 Nebraska football team. Now, there's plenty of videos that Husker Vision did that got you behind the scenes. But a mic'd up Zach Wiegert or Brendan Stye or Zadiska or pick one of those dudes. But Wiegert was the guy that would scream at the defensive lineman that Texas Tech had and say, hey, dude, we're going here. Stop it. I mean, he'd tell him to play. He'd go Larry Bird on opponents. Kansas State. Hey, dude, we're running here. LP's coming downhill. Oh, hey, dude, Schlesinger inside the five. It's happening. You can do nothing about it. Snap counts on two. Ready? Let's go. So, yeah, you're just good enough to just, they know what you're doing. You know what you're doing. And they have no answer.
But there's this paranoia that exists now.
Oh, I know.
Right? Where coaches are just like, no. Because if the film gets out, then the opponents will get it. And the opponents will know. What, that you're going to run an out route sometime? What are you so worried about? Are you reinventing the sport?
No, it's not that complicated.
No, you're not.
On third and seven, it was either going to Gronk or Edelman, okay?
Right. Like, and yeah, and if somebody saw that.
Randy Moss fade route, that's what's happening.
No, I know. So for Nebraska, it's, you know, look, we're going to screw up on first and second down and play some yellow ball on third. All right.
Sometimes it'll work. Kidding. Sometimes it won't. But
that's what they're trying to get away from.
Right.
I understand that. But why not open it up more often? Is what I'm saying. Like,
maybe this is the precursor to that.
Could be. But why have it behind such an iron? And it's not just Nebraska. A lot of places do that. But why? You really don't need to look. I understand that you want some practice.
Control, Mark.
That's maybe part of it.
Hey, maybe they're keeping their new quarterback run plays under wraps.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, all the new quarterback run packages.
Hey,
I bet you if they got out, nobody would have ever seen those plays before. Like, wow. You know, Wisconsin's just tucking that away. File, save as.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to stop them now.
Hey.
In fact, wouldn't it be better to open up practice and then just play 100 different plays?
Because clearly.
100 different plays blocked differently. You know, and then you send all the defensive coordinators that got a hold of the secret film on this wild goose chase trying to prepare for those things. And then you run something else in the game. Like, this can help you.
There's clearly time and extra time to practice to be able to okie doke. Yes.
So you go in with are you covering it as a journalist today? Or are you just going to go sit as a fan? What are you doing for it?
I don't know that I'll roll in with a backpack, but I'll probably take some notes on my phone.
Okay.
You know, I'm debating whether it's a Long John's type day or not. I know I said it's going to clear off, but.
Not Long John Silver's, because it's always that day.
Uh-huh, right.
It is all. Based
on the amount of wings I took down last night, I'm not eating for 7 weeks. quarterbacks, Kranak, all right. Logan Smothers, Heinrich Harburg. That's something I'm interested in seeing today. You know, where's Logan at throwing the football? Good reviews this week. Good progress this spring because the kid gets to have a spring. And then you got the pride of Kearney Catholic, man, that he's it sounds like he's been all right as well. Good arm talent.
That's the word so far. I haven't heard a whole lot of specifics about Logan throwing the ball other than they're trying to, quote, fix his stroke. Which is their parlance for, you know, your arm delivery, what it looks like when you're throwing.
What's your accuracy like?
Yeah, fixing his stroke. So outside of that, you don't hear a lot about his throwing, but you do hear confirmations that he's very fast. You have heard Frost mention that he's a quick thinker,
mm-hmm.
knows where to take the ball, which is half the battle. So, yeah, he'll be interesting to watch. I wonder how much Adrian will play and how much ahead he looks compared to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to forget when the team went 3-5 and, you know, Adrian's had his struggles before. Like, it's easy to forget towards the end of the year, he was playing at a fairly high level, save for a couple bad interceptions and a couple bad fumbles, which mm-hmm. I know sounds contradictory to saying that he played really well, but I mean, he was 75-80% on most days with maybe a couple picks. Or he's running for 80 to 130 yards with a couple fumbles. Like, stuff that he presumably can clean up. How much far and away better does he look than everybody else?
That's,
and what about the Harburg kid? What about Harburg where it sounds like you struck gold there in terms of like ability.
Mm-hmm.
You got a dude. You got a dude that can throw it, but come on, he's you know, adjusting from class, what is it, C2, and he's trying to unseat a four-year starter. Like, it's okay. Give him a little time.
Well, the thing about it is you need to be comfortable, and it's going to be beyond spring, but you need to be comfortable with whoever your number two is, and if you're not, it's time to comb the portal, all right? It just is because of injury history and just being able to navigate a season with an option at quarterback if your main guy isn't available for whatever reason.
Is Burrow still in the portal?
No, Burrow is waiting on Zach Taylor to get him either a tight end or a left tackle.
Got it.
There's your answer there. But you got a different dynamic here with Smothers, who has been around longer, so there's more comfort with offensive understanding, but you got to go execute it versus Harburg and, you know, trying to get his understanding down because, you know, it's new. But from a talent standpoint of ability to execute, you've got that dynamic. One guy knows what to do, another guy's trying to figure out what to do. And from a skill set standpoint, you know, who's got the upside. Interested here with Gabe Irvin, too, because running backs have been, watching versus doing a lot. And Irvin seems like a guy that is, A, available, B, has some talent, and who else can kind of jump out at that running back spot? That's going to be pretty important. And we had a really good week. We had great chats with Barry Alvarez and Gary Barnett and Coach Ron Brown, who you'll hear on the Rewind here in about 10 minutes. And it's Barnett said some things that were pretty interesting, like, you know, after spring, your defense is pretty much going to be what it's going to be. Like, you're heading into fall with kind of knowing what your strengths are defensively and where they're at. But offensively, it's always continuing to evolve and grow and improve. So what you see today, again, hard not to knee-jerk because you've not seen football forever. And even after the spring game here May 1st, there's still a lot of room to grow, right? Offensively. So if it doesn't look as fine-tuned or polished, or if it's hard to get many takeaways, that's all right. It's still something that's growing and developing.
Yeah, there's a lot on offense that will be interesting to watch. Running back and receiver, yeah, which are the guys that you talk about the most, right? Mm-hmm. Outside of quarterback, like, you know, those are the guys that get the ball, but there's just a lot unproven there.
Mm-hmm.
You have bodies. You absolutely have bodies. You have depth. There's no question about that. You finally have that. You also have a range of types of players. Whereas, like, since Stanley Morgan left, Nebraska has not had a threat at receiver. They've had good players, decent players, right? Kanavai Noah was decent. He's a pretty good player, right? I'm not going to fault him. Falk had some good catches last, but I'm talking about like a legitimate threat where you have to roll coverage that way. You know, you have to consider doubling him because you can't let him get loose, which opens up somebody else. Like, Nebraska hasn't had that kind of threat since Morgan left. Think about that.
They had more than one option,
at least for a whole year. So right. Like Washington would split out. He would there's a case in point when Washington got split out. And he was right, and his head was right, and he was in the game, and he was, you know, focused and all that. I mean, he was a threat, and he made big plays. But Nebraska hasn't had it consistently since Stanley Morgan 2018, right? They just haven't. You know, you had Spielman for a time, and then, you know, things didn't work out as well in year two for him, and then he bailed. I don't know. So like Torre. Manning. Have you seen Manning's calves, by the way? I'm not trying to, like...
You're yelling at me for being a recruiting dork, and you're asking me about a 22-year-old's calves?
I'm telling you. The dude's got Popeye calves. Have you seen those? Every picture, you're like, dude, Photoshop?
And what I'm not going to do today is walk up and say, hey, bro, can I take a picture of your calves?
Just look at his calves, everybody. I'm telling you. They're superhuman. They're ridiculous.
Kranak wants a 10x8, and can you sign him?
I mean, I'm just saying. But, I mean, like a physical freak. He really is. He's one of those guys. There's not a lot of those people walking on the planet.
No.
Nebraska's got one of them, right? Is he going to be good to go mentally? Mm. And what is he like physically? He's so big. He's huge. He's a problem to cover. If you're a 190-pound corner and you got Manning, I mean, come on.
What's your take as you kind of sifted through the week with the praise? You've had praise by the wideouts towards the quarterbacks. You've had praise towards the wideouts by the defensive backs. And it's one thing if the coaches do it, but you got teammates talking about other teammates. They were asked, and they answered. And it's been, dare I say, glowing and pretty optimistic.
Yeah. And look, it's so easy to buy in at this time of the year, right? To start drinking the Kool-Aid. But you just figure it has to break at some point. And if it doesn't, it's just like, look, it's his make or break. We don't like to talk about it. You know, we don't like to admit. And I don't think if they had a terrible year, Frost would get run out of town this year. But like it would start heading in that direction.
There's urgency, and yeah. That urgency is paired with the reality of the schedule. But I think there's also some comfort with as many guys that came back defensively. You got something you can lean on. There's urgency with special teams, and you got a 1-2 punch going with it between Bush and Dawson, right? Where they'll be better because they've got to be better. And it's being focused on and worked on, so you are practicing it. And then offensively, there's a lot worse things to have than a guy that was freshman All-American level and a Heisman favorite that has experienced some ups and downs that is really kind of hell-bent on ending this thing the right way, responding to the adversity with your quarterback. If he could stay healthy. And so, forgive me, and I'm not asking for seconds, but I'm looking at the old glass of Kool-Aid here, because this could be okay. This could absolutely be okay this year. And just play better. I'm not moral victory guy either. I mean, go beat who you're supposed to beat in the West. Go contend. But I'm not stupid to realize that. Well, it better be 10-3 this year. It'd be really cool if it was. Nebraska fans would love it. But I'm not to the point right now where they just show and win. they're trying to get back to, let's just get good four quarters of football and not fumble three times and not have a holding call and an inopportune turnover and let's get some points in the red zone if you're a Nebraska fan. I think all those things can happen. And I think you can have some tight ball games that, guess what, you win. It'd be kind of fun. You know, think back to this 2012 season, right? And I know it didn't end well with how the second half went against South Carolina bowl game, and then, you know, Wisconsin did what they did in the Big Ten title game. But I look at how many, like, close victories that Nebraska had in 2012. Like, we're talking Sparty, we're talking Northwestern, and Wisconsin and Ohio State. I mean, there's just a slew of, well, they didn't beat Ohio State that year, but my point is Nebraska found some magic. Maybe you just need something good to happen, and instead of, like, black magic, you get some good magic going.
You could figure that the ball seems to
they're a little due, aren't they?
Bounce their way.
They're a little bit due. Some of it's their own doing, obviously. But the other side of it is maybe you morph into one of those teams that just finds a way to be dialed in, and you get those coin flip victories. How many years have we seen Iowa? And they're traditionally, you know, a 10, 9, 8 win football team. and they're usually pretty good. And when you look at their losses the last 2 or 3 years, they're a 10-2 or 9-3. I mean, you look at their losses, it's a 5-point road loss at Michigan, some weird ass score, right? It's a close loss to Wisconsin. It's whatever they do with Ohio State. Maybe Northwestern stings them. I don't know. But you can walk away going, yeah, woulda, coulda, shoulda, if you're looking at Iowa's schedule, but you were in it till the end. And then there's a handful of those. Yeah, they got Nebraska again for year number 6 in a row. And, man, it was another 3-point game because they made a play at the end with their field goal kicker. So that's just how life's going to be in the Big Ten. And it's going to be some years you break more than you make. And in other years, it's going to be one of those magic seasons where, hey, you were able to get to an 8-9-10 win total. And, man, there were some memorable last-second games you pulled out of the fire. That's how life's going to be moving forward.
And it doesn't take much to just flip the results in a few of those games.
Right.
You know, okay, so take Ohio State off the table, even though, again,
but build up to them.
Yeah, if you have the hankering for it, that's worth a rewatch. Nebraska played pretty well in that game. I'm telling you, the score got away from them. But I don't know. If you just go back and watch, like, Nebraska was competing with him. They did not get embarrassed and run off the field like they did the year before, where they didn't even compete. It just wasn't even a matchup. This one was at least a matchup. And they had some bad breaks, fumble return for a touchdown, things like that, right?
Couple of fumbles inside the Ohio State 40 while they're driving in the second half. Yeah.
You know, got beat deep a couple times by Fields, but that's what
it's
he does.
It's going to happen, yeah.
He had kind of the catch of the year in the back of the end zone.
Which
Ohio
was
State
money.
Had.
That was
right?
Sweet.
And so, I mean, but in terms of just play-to-play, Nebraska was there. They belonged, at least. So take that one off the table, and then you got to take Illinois off the table, which was just weird.
I want that game to stay on the table forever, because that is your come to Jesus lesson. You got to show up every week. Reminder. That's your Iowa State 92. All right.
It was
for this crew of kids and this staff. That is your never forget game.
So the other six games, though, the other six games are basically played within 10 points, one way or the other. Northwestern, you lose by 8.
You led.
Penn State, you win by a touchdown. Iowa, you lose by less than a touchdown.
You led.
Purdue, you win by 10. Minnesota, you lose by a touchdown.
You
Rutgers,
led.
You win by a touchdown. So everything, most of the games are within a touchdown or so. It's not a huge thing to flip. It's not Nebraska getting boat raced by 30 all the time. It's not that. It's a turnover here or there.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, one less for you, one more for them. We might be talking about a team that went 6-2, 5-3 last year.
Could have been.
It's not. You know what I mean? Like, they're not that far away. They really aren't. But are they going to have the? Do they have the moxie? Do they have the wherewithal? All that stuff to actually flip it, because they're not far. But is there something in the water that's going to prevent them from doing that? Where it's like, nope, they're just turnover prone, and this is just what they are.
Well,
they're close, they're talented, but they can't put it all together.
It starts. It started with spring ball, but a chance to get out in front of some people today. The open practice. More thoughts on that coming up, and we'll get to the rewind here. In just a moment, Ron Brown with us here. It's the weekend edition. Mark Kranak, Elijah Herbel, Chris Schmidt. Hail Varsity Weekend continues. We're presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Back into it. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We welcome in offensive analyst with Nebraska. We say hi to Ron Brown. Coach, what's new? How are you?
Schmitty, how are you, buddy? Spring is in the air, baby.
It is. And this time of year's got to make you smile with, there's actually a spring football this year.
Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be good. It's some definitions. It's so hard to even put a 10 over this last year's circus of the pandemic and the difficulties of knowing what you could do, what you couldn't do. Mm-hmm. Hats off to all the people in the authorities regarding sports and tournaments and games and championships, because it had to be just a logistical nightmare to even kick things off the ground. I watched the NCAA basketball, Schmitty, and I really enjoyed it. I personally really enjoyed it. And I'm really pleased that that sports has been able to continue on, and what took place in college football last year and in midstream as well. But boy, it was tough. But my hat's off to the people who put a lot of work into it to see it through.
Now, Coach, you probably had UCLA in your Final Four, didn't you?
that sounds like when I was a kid, because when I was a kid, that was always the case.
No brainer.
They were ripping off national championships left and right back then. But I was excited about their team this year. To go from first four to where they went, Final Four, was really special.
Oh, they were a party to watch. No doubt. Want to switch gears and spend a little bit of time. So, what have you been up to, and how have you been keeping busy with your analyst role? Kind of give us a look into what you're doing, if you feel good about doing that. And I'm anxious to hear how you've been spending your days.
I love football, and the Lord has ever since I was a little boy, Schmitty. Since I can remember, 5 years old, I've loved football. I would go out and play football in the neighborhood, out on a playground with the guys. I would go play by myself, and toss the ball to myself. I watched every college football game imaginable as a child. My dad and I, we watched the history of college football, basically all the way from the 60s all the way through. I was adopted by him. For some reason, he loved football, and for some reason, God wired me up for football. I get to coach for all these years, and now I serve in a way where guys that I coached, Scott Frost, Matt Davidson, Ryan Held, Greg Austin, all these guys I recruited or coached or what have you, now I get to serve these guys. So God has been really, really good to me in that way. It's a very special blessing. So, yeah, I'm loving what I'm doing, bro.
Ron Brown's with us, senior offensive analyst with us for Nebraska, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, the NCAA has moved forward with the one-time transfer rule. It's been adopted, and it's not a ton different than what colleges for basketball and football had gone through, with kind of a free year with COVID, but now there is no penalty for transferring. Every student-athlete's allowed a free transfer year without losing a year of eligibility. What's the reaction to that? I know there's positives, and I know there's some negatives out there in the coaching circles, as well as with some of the parents.
Schmitty, I think it makes recruiting even more challenging than it's always been. And of course, every college football coach has had to recruit. And when you're recruiting, you're making a long-term investment. Everybody is. I mean, the parents, the student athletes, the high school coaches of those student athletes, the college coaches who are recruiting them. Whichever decision you make via signing date to what school you attend, that's a long-term investment. That's always been a long-term investment. And in a sense, it's like friendship. It's like marriage. It's like, a selection of a job. We know that they don't always last. But I think you go in with the mindset, Schmitty, that this is my school, this is where it happens, and this is what I'm invested to. I think to on the side of the kid, the fact that he can decide to leave when he wants to, it appears to be advantageous for him, mm-hmm. but it's not always a good thing for him. Some of the greatest stories, and not only in sports but in life, are people who hang in there and go through adversity they're not getting what they want initially, but they see it through. And that's been a remarkable trait of our country over the years, but we see less and less and less of that, Schmitty. And I've voiced it to you before. I personally don't really like the easy get out of I want to go somewhere else because the grass is greener. Are there times when it is a good thing for a student athlete to transfer? Yes, there is. And, you know, in their defense, coaches kind of hop around and go from here to there to there, and they transfer. And so I can understand why these men who come to these student athletes' homes in front of their parents, and I was one of those men for many, many years, you're sitting in a home and saying, hey, I'm gonna your son is my son for the next 4 or 5 years and beyond. And now that coach decides to leave and go somewhere else because the grass is greener for him. That's a hard thing on the student athlete. So yes, there's some give and take and advantages and disadvantages, some yay and nays in all of this. But generally speaking, Schmitty, I keep looking when a player comes to me and says, Coach Brown, you know, I want to transfer for this reason or that reason, and it's not about graduation. It's just about, well, I'm not happy with my playing time where I'm on the depth chart. I always point him to the statue out in the north end there, and I say, you see that young man and that statue standing next to Coach Osborne? That guy's name was Brooke Beringer. This is the 25th year, Schmitty, since Brooke Beringer has died in the plane crash, the tragic plane crash where we lost him. I happened to recruit Brooke and be a part of the coaching staff that was around him, and we saw what he represented in the midst of difficult times, and he didn't transfer, and he stayed at it, and the story is still very powerful 25 years later. So anyhow, that's kind of how I feel about it, Schmitty. I don't give maybe it's not a definitive answer that you wanted, but it is just expressing my feelings about it all. I do, in the long haul, believe in seeing it through, and as a last resort, the transfer. And therefore, I don't necessarily really like the fact that lots of kids, thousands and thousands of kids, will be on that transfer portal where they're thinking that the grass is greener somewhere else all the time.
You know, the process of improving and the jump from high school to college is not easy, and there's good ball players everywhere, and then there's the academic side, and then there's being away from home. I mean, there's a lot of challenges and hurdles, and it's, you know, it's part of growing up. And I'm interested, you know, what amount of time and energy is now going to have to be devoted by peers and college coaches to re-recruit kids, because kids are used to having it now. I was a teenager at one point, and, you know, I thought I needed it now versus having to kind of grind your way up, and it always is really rewarding when you grind your way up and achieve and accomplish something, but that's not always the mindset or the thought process when you're a teenager.
No, it isn't, and we're making it much easier all the time for young men, and the ages are getting younger, where as soon as the going gets tough, that's a good avenue for me to go seek something somewhere else. And, you know, I can't say that I've studied all the transfers, Schmitty, and what's happened to them, but, you know, the few that I've tracked, 90% of them end up in the same or the worse, a worse situation than they were before they left in their transfer. And if it's a problem that young man has, let's say that therein lies a problem that he has, and it's not going over well with the coaching staff. There's a level of discipline, and he decides, well, I don't like the discipline. I'm going to go somewhere else where I'll get treated better. You oftentimes, particularly in those situations, see that young man taking the same problem to the other school. Mm-hmm. And that's why you know, even as a – there's two sides of this. One is the transfer himself. But then there's the coaching staff that's receiving a transfer. What are you getting? Who are you getting? Everybody better do their research. because if a young man is leaving one place because he's disgruntled about this, that, and the other, is he going to be just as disgruntled about this, that, and the other when he comes to this place? Because, quite frankly, things aren't really that much different from one school to the next, to be honest with you. There's going to be competition. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be adversity. There's going to be good and bad. And you're going to have to learn how to be a circumstance-free person rather than a circumstance-based person. And what I mean by that, Schmitty, is that there are young men that I've seen over the years who every time the circumstances change, they're up and down like a yo-yo everywhere. But then there's few young men that I've seen who are able to withstand any kind of pressure, difficulty, adversity, success, you name it. They seem to go through it with flying colors. And they're not people that don't get affected by things, but they're people that have a tremendous amount of discipline and are able to look past and through things and see the other side. And that's what we're trying to get young men to do, learn how to be circumstance-free, to push through hardships and great times to see the end result.
Ron Brown's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, senior offensive analyst, Nebraska football. Coach, a thought here on the spring that's been ongoing. It's been wonderful to have, you know, in-person access. We're thankful for that. We're thankful for an open practice on Saturday, and then, you know, a spring game coming up here in May. As you've had a chance to view it, it sounds like things have gone pretty well this spring here, specifically with the offensive side of the ball.
Well, I think that there's a lot of growth, you know, Schmitty. We knew we were going to grow. We knew we needed some time to build a foundation. And, you know, the thing about building a foundation, Schmitty, on both sides of the ball, is that you often, and when you're building a tall building, you have to dig down before you dig up. And you have to dig a deep foundation if you want a tall building. And so people don't really see what's going on underneath the ground. You know, they just, people want to see something that's emerging and erecting very high. Sometimes they want the meat before it's cooked. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to allow for building and foundation. And we're starting to see that now. We're starting to see these young players doing things consistently, and the toughness and the mental toughness and the physical toughness and the inner drive and the outer drive and all those kinds of things. We're starting to see that shaping up in the program. And so that's the beauty of spring ball, particularly this year's spring ball, being able to finally get out there and have these kinds of practices. And yes, we have seen improvement. We finished off the season offensively. You mentioned the offense. You know, we finished off by and large pretty well in that Rutgers game. And, you know, we've often talked about that last game of your season being kind of the first game of your next season. You know, there's a momentum, particularly when you have young players, when you haven't graduated a whole lot of players. We have a lot of players who played in that Rutgers game who are with us now. And some of those younger players got a chance to play quite a bit in that game and do a great job. I'm thinking of, for example, Turner Cochran. Turner was a big factor in that Rutgers game as a freshman. Hadn't played a whole lot up until that point. Very talented young man. And you see it continuing on here through spring ball. A lot of momentum. So, and he's just one of many.
Coach, it feels like a bit of a makeover as well, just from a size standpoint. Big kids on the offensive line, a lot of running backs that Coach Held's obviously analyzing and coaching up. And then the wide receivers have all been pretty pretty complimentary of Adrian and the other quarterbacks, on top of the fact that there's some bigger body wide receivers. And you coached wideouts for a long time, and you had all shapes and sizes of wideouts, from the itty bitty committee to Johnny Mitchell. So it feels like that the chemistry is pretty high between the quarterbacks and wide receivers right now.
Yeah, it is, and I think sometimes we make an enormous deal about size and maybe the outer dimensions, speed and so forth. Now, they're important. Don't get me wrong. We want fast guys. We want large guys, powerful guys. But the itty-bitty committee, for example, I remember guys like Corey Dixon and Reggie Ball and Abdul Muhammad, you know, that group, Brendan Holbein, John Bedrill, those guys were not the biggest receivers, but they were very quick and very tough and tenacious. And I think that that's really what we're looking at here. Whatever we have in terms of a size and talent, it's about maximization. It's about physical toughness, mental toughness. It's about being able to play ferociously no matter who you are. It's about backup players coming in and having depth, because whether they're walk-ons or players who had not necessarily maybe they weren't highly recruited guys, they weren't 3-, 4-, 5-star kind of kids, but they come in here and they develop. You know, we used to get tons of guys who were 2-star kids, you know, walk-on level type players, and they walked out of this program as 4-star kids because of development. So all those kinds of things shaping in a program have to be going. Yes, you have to recruit well, but you have to develop well. And you have to, you know, to build layers of players so that there's not much of a drop-off between a third-team player and a first-team player. So all those kinds of things, I think, Schmitty, are really happening. And I've been here, this is my 5th decade now in Nebraska football, so I've kind of seen thousands of kids come through here, many coaches come through here. I've seen all kinds of things, recruits, scholarship kids, 5-star kids, walk-on kids. I've seen the bust, and I've seen the bloomers. So it's been fun to really get a shape. And again, I'm not God, so I don't know for sure what's going to happen in the future, but I've been around long enough, and I'm hopefully being able to really believe what I'm seeing. And what I'm seeing is that there's definitely development, and we're moving in a good direction.
Coach Ron Brown with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, we'll let you go on this, but just to finish on that development, that takes some time, fair to say. You can get guys that can come in and play as a freshman. Tommy Frazier comes to mind. Grant Wistrom comes to mind. But that's not always the norm, correct? I mean, it takes some guys different times, different levels before they pop.
No, it's absolutely right. And just the word itself tells you that. It development is a process. And, you know, I think the big thing, Schmitty, is it's really hard for people to be patient, particularly when our fans, for example, have been able to see national championships. They've been able to witness it and so forth. But, again, I go back to personal experience because of my 5 decades here. I remember how low we felt after losing 7 straight bowl games from 1987 all the way through 1993. We lost 7 straight bowl games. Some of those bowl games were ugly. We were bombed out of the stadium. I mean, it just didn't look good at all. And in 1993, it was a close one. 1992 actually was a closer game in the Orange Bowl to Florida State. And then 93 was that really close game where we nearly won the national championship in 93. And then the string that we got in terms of national championships and national championship games, it didn't happen overnight. It was difficult. There were times when you and I have talked about, you know, where we all wondered where we were going to get fired along the way during those difficult times. So, yeah, there is something about a development that takes a while, and you have to stay with it. Telling other people or convincing other people to be patient sometimes seems like a it's a vain thing at times because it feels like people, they just want to see the results. They don't really care about the process. Not until you raise your own children, Schmitty, do you start to realize that I think I appreciate development. I think I appreciate the process because you see in your own children when you're raising them that it doesn't just happen overnight. And when you're personally involved, like I have been and our coaches for years and years, you begin to see that, yes, it takes a while. But boy, is it rewarding when it does happen. And when it does kick in, the momentum is pretty amazing and impressive.
Ron Brown with us. Coach, we'll see you on Saturday. Thanks for the time today.
You bet, Schmitty. Thanks for having me. God bless, man.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, Roll Tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to an Hour 2 Weekend Edition, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Elijah Herbo with us, and getting ready for open practice today. A chance to see Nebraska football up close, and that will be a treat. We welcome in managing editor with HailVarsity.com and magazine, Brandon Vogel, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Get his book, Dream Like a Champion, with John Cook. Talk some volleyball as well, but before we get into some spring ball thoughts, Vogue's Colin Cowherd just kind of reposted and retweeted the best food in every state as done by Taste Atlas. And each state, I don't know who they asked, but posted their, I guess, signature dish. Because Vogue's, Kranak, Elijah, when I think of California, I think of Californian clam chowder. Not street tacos, not Dodger dogs, not some sort of phenomenal, you know, wine and cheese spread, but I think of California clam chowder. This is good, bad, and ugly, all in one little posting of the 50 states. Vogues, what's your take on this, Kranak? I know you're a connoisseur of food as well.
Yeah, we always get these food maps, and I think a lot of them are actually designed just to make people angry. Like, what, you think Skittles is the most popular candy in Idaho? You're crazy. This one actually was mostly accurate. There are some weird ones. California is just too big of a state to boil it down. I mean, you would think, I would have assumed maybe some sort of sushi roll. Okay. Would be California's number one. But for the most part, I was like, yeah, this adds up. Although I don't know what funeral potatoes are. And I assume this is why I haven't spent much time in Utah.
Dude, that was exactly what I was about to zero in
on. You've never had funeral potatoes? We don't call them funeral potatoes, but it's just, you know, either the kind of the shredded potatoes with the cornflakes on top. You mean you have them for Thanksgiving every year?
And look, I don't know what the hell's going on in Vermont, but cheddar cheese apple pie.
I've never tried that. Is that good?
That's their thing. I have no idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, people do it.
New England diners. Yeah, a lot of New England diners will just give you a slice of, like, a hunk of cheddar cheese if you order apple pie. And it's a nice compliment.
And can we talk about the complete cop-out in Wisconsin? They just put cheese. Like, obviously.
Yeah. And they didn't even put a nice image of cheese. They just used, like, the Wisconsin Dairy logo, which was my favorite part.
Yeah, and you had some others that just, you know, pepperoni roll in West Virginia. Like, what?
Isn't it meth and Bush Light?
Right, exactly. That's what you're thinking. But Florida has key lime pie. Good.
Shredded
grits. South Carolina. Yeah. Peach cobbler for Georgia. Uh-huh. Gumbo for Louisiana. Like, this is, and of course, Runza for Nebraska.
Yeah, thank God. One of these food maps finally got a Runza in Nebraska. I feel like this is the first one I've seen.
Yeah, Iowa gets the
finally gets its due.
Iowa gets the grilled corn on the cob. Kansas gets the Kansas City style ribs.
Works.
The chicken fried steak in Wyoming seems pretty fitting, but I would kind of go hot beef sandwich.
Or maybe like elk or something.
Right, yeah. Something good like that. What elk in chili. God's name is the North Dakota dish, Vogel?
No, I have no idea. I assume it's some sort of fish dish that similar to Minnesota's hot dish over just over the border.
I have some expertise on this.
Okay.
So lefse, my family makes it all the time. It's a Scandinavian dish.
Okay.
Imagine it's a tortilla, but instead of being made from corn or flour, it's made from potatoes.
Okay.
So then it comes in like this like flat little tortilla thing, and then how my family does, I'm not sure if this is tradition everywhere, but you just put butter and sugar on it and warm it up in like the microwave or like on the stove or in the oven or something, and then you have this nice buttery, sugary, like little potato tortilla you roll up.
Hmm. That sounds really pretty awesome right now. Yeah, lobster roll for Maine, pretty good. Crab cakes for Maryland, because they do football and crab cakes. A pork roll for Jersey. Shouldn't it be a half-lit, like, Marlboro?
See, that could work, yeah.
But hot chicken in Vogue's in Tennessee. Hot chicken, is that the national dish in Tennessee?
It is in Nashville, for sure. And it has certainly exploded to become that. So I'm not surprised to see it there. But it's not like, you know, I leave the house once every 3 months and I have to pass by six different hot chicken places here. You know, so, but you know, when KFC and everybody else is like, oh, Nashville hot chicken sandwich, when everybody's got their version of it, it's just kind of like, yep, that's you now. You're hot chicken place. Mm.
I would think edible / gummy for Colorado instead of Rocky Mountain oysters.
Yeah, that's probably
not
true.
That is not listed there. All right. Surprising.
We'll get into football, but I just had to like pump the brakes on football for 2 seconds on this.
Yeah, I just retweeted this on the ESPN Lincoln Twitter account.
The food dish. So, Kranak, you're a food guy. Vogues, you're a food guy. I eat lots of food, so I thought we'd go here to start out. Spring ball, Vogues. It's going to be fun, man. Open practice. Get a chance to see Nebraska. How much are you weighing this second quarterback spot race? Where are you at with that here as we go into another week?
It's interesting for a spring storyline. I mean, I think so far, based on coaching staff reports, I think Henrik Harburg has come in at a higher level than most people would have expected him to. Certainly myself, I mean, I kind of entered the spring looking at this as, well, you've got a pretty clear progression now. It's with obviously Adrian Show to run. Logan Smothers, a lot of the talk around him in through a unique fall, of course, was pretty promising. So he'll be your number two, and you got a true freshman behind him. He's his first semester on campus, and that experience would be valuable.
Bogues.
Brandon, I don't know if he's...
We got it. We got him back. You left us at unique.
Okay. I guess the point I was getting to was I do think this is closer than I anticipated that it would be. I still would be surprised, you know, when you factor in the ability for a redshirt year in the fall if Smothers doesn't end up being that second QB. But there are other people, some people on our staff that think Harbert's going to take that spot. So I think for something like today, getting a look at those two guys will be pretty valuable for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think part of that is just based on, you know, Harbert kind of has that Justin Herbert, like, that's his comp physically. Right? Of course, it doesn't mean he's going to be a draft pick. That's not what I'm saying.
Let's just go Josh Allen.
Right, but I mean, no, really, like rangy, very big, huge arm span, you know, huge wingspan, very fast. Like he's a large, rangy athlete at quarterback, and there's not a lot of those. there's just not a ton of those guys walking around. So, I think by that alone, that's probably been the most surprising thing. Because Brandon, I'm sure you've noticed whenever the players or coaches haven't asked about it, they're almost dismissive when talking about his arm strength. They're almost just like, that yeah, the dude's got an arm.
Yeah, he, by all accounts, has been very impressive on that front. But also, I think like he just might be a really good athlete, not just kind of like a rangy, athletic quarterback type. Like, where is he? Almost landed on the podium when they did their performance testing as a true freshman in his first couple of months on campus. So that's what Nebraska might be working with there. It seems like they certainly uncovered a gem. And we'll see. Like I said, it's been, I kind of thought this was all gift wrapped and ready to go in terms of Nebraska's kind of QB pecking order. And it might not be.
It's important. I wanted to start with quarterbacks because of, you know, by all accounts, Adrian's kind of upped his game and level, which is cool. And then what's your backup situation look like? Because Nebraska's dealt with major snaps by a backup, or they went to the bullpen in the last 2 years. And now with the portal being the portal, you know, there's that question also out there, Vogues, that looms with, do you go get a transfer quarterback if you aren't comfortable with your backups to Adrian?
Yeah, it's just a tough spot, I think, for Nebraska with just how it breaks out, because each of the all of his seasons, he's missed some starts. Mm-hmm. So you've got that part of it. But what kind of transfer quarterback are you going to get that you're like, I mean, because effectively you dress it up however you have to, but they're your insurance policy. They're like, if our starter goes down, we don't want to have to put a true or a redshirt freshman in there. Welcome to the program. So there's that part of it. And then what does that do to a Logan Smothers, to a Harburg? Just saying like, hey, we don't think you're ready yet. So you have to navigate all those things in a vacuum. Yeah, it would be great to have a guy who's played some football in case you need them, but I just don't see Nebraska going that route.
Yeah, and I also think it's going to be a difficult sell to whoever ends up in the portal. And you can get quality quarterbacks in the portal. I mean, Fields was one. Jalen Hurts, like, you go on and on. Like, a lot of good transfer quarterbacks have gone on to do good things, but you usually want to do that with some idea that you'll come in and be the starter. I think there will be quality options available, but they're going to look at Adrian and just be like, no. So I agree with you, Brent. I don't think Nebraska is going to tap in there unless they get sort of like the perfect situation.
Yeah, there are plenty of quarterbacks out there, and like you said, it's kind of becoming the thing now. It's just the timing's wrong for Nebraska, I think, and that's a little bit of potentially a tough break for the Huskers if they do deal with some injuries. But you know, it's just kind of the lay of the land as far as I see it here going into the summer months.
Brendan, go for it, Mark.
No, you go ahead, man. You go ahead.
I was going to shift gears a little bit and go running backs, because a quarterback's best friend is a good running game. And I just want to ask Brandon if he's buying the stock on Gabe Irvin.
Perhaps not as much as some others. I mean, everything we've heard has been great. And I know Greg Smith was our recruiting analyst, was really high on him coming out of high school. You are kind of waiting for one of these guys to pop, because I've seen things to like in really all of the running backs that this coaching staff has signed. And we haven't seen sort of anyone separate themselves from the pack. And it's still early in most of those guys' careers. So, you know, everything so far seems to be encouraging. Nebraska's running back room is so kind of wide open at this point that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Gabe Irvin is a true freshman and it's one of their top two or three backs, just because I have a hard time identifying who that is. But I do, I wonder this every spring. It's just a matter of which guy and what. Spring storyline. And then we get to the fall and you're like, hey, what happened? I'm probably overly cautious with that.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Let's shift over to volleyball, because Nebraska is now in the Sweet 16 up in Omaha. Looked dominant against Texas State in their first match there. takes on Baylor today. And just for frame of reference, Texas State split with Baylor this year, right? So I wouldn't say that you should overlook that. Do you know, matchup-wise, Brandon, does Baylor present any specific issues that Nebraska should be concerned about, or would you consider – put it this way. Let's put this in a football point spread terms. Is Nebraska a three-point favorite here or like nine?
Probably between those two. I would say a 5 or 6 point favorite is what I would make it in football terms. Baylor's good. They're big and they're athletic. I think they were top 10 in blocks per set. They had two players in the top 30 in terms of blocks. And the player you got to watch out for is Yesenia Presley. She was the 2019 player of the year in college volleyball. Her numbers are a little bit down from what they were that season. And Baylor's, you know, had some – they're an interesting team. You know, they got out to a fast start and got a bunch of wins, had that loss to Texas State late in the season, got pushed twice to five sets by Pepperdine. In fact, I actually thought Pepperdine was going to get them the second time in the NCAA tournament and almost did. So I think Nebraska has an edge, but – you know, you're at the point in the tournament where these are talented teams. These are all basically top 10 or top 15 teams that are left, minus Western Kentucky, which was kind of the one. It wasn't that big of an upset, but the one upset from those early stages of a national seed. So I like Nebraska's chances, and I really liked what I saw from them against Texas State. You know, we are all concerned about the layoff, and Texas State is a team that can hurt you if you don't play well. And Nebraska played well.
Vogues, you know, reading John or listening to John Cook a little bit, he was happy with the win, but he was never satisfied. You know, what did you take away from Coach Cook's demeanor? Is he at the point, knowing him like you know him, where he's like, man, we need to be so much better at this point? Or is he, you know, what's up with his frustrations? And you always got to be critical as a coach. I get it. Because, I mean, Baylor can beat you. You got to be ready and be better on Sunday. But I'm interested to hear your takeaway with him. Is it coach just being coach, or are there concerns? Are there storm clouds?
And this has kind of been an undercurrent throughout the season. Something that he's brought up on a number of occasions is he'll often just kind of slip it in there. And I think it goes under the radar. He's like, well, you know, if we start playing like we look in practice, we can be pretty good. And I don't know that the Texas State match was quite to that level. So you're still waiting for that part of it. And I think some of that too is, just, well, you alluded to it. Are we where we need to be right now? And I think with this season being in the spring also, but also the stops and the starts, the cancellations Nebraska had, the long layoff it had, you know, Coach Cook has done this for a very long time at a very high level. And well, he talked about it in his pre-match press conference about all the things they're trying to do. Be like, how can we peak at the right time? You know, it's like the you know, the friend we all have, sorry, I'm not that friend for you guys, but that's really into like measuring their performance and their workouts. And they're like, if I drink a gallon of water now, I'll be better when I work out tomorrow at 5 a.m. That's the kind of the level that they're at. Like, this is always a bit of a puzzle for them of how do we get our team ready, able to play the best it possibly can. And with a different schedule, I think there's a little bit of frustration with just having to reconfigure that on the fly.
Kranak's the type of guy that, I mean, when we talk about measuring performance, I mean, I love him, and he's going to crush Tito's on a Thursday so he can be ready to tailgate on a Saturday.
Let's see. Yeah, you got it. It's your warm-up fuel. Uh-huh. It's important. Look, to your point, though, Brandon, I see a team, at least against Texas State, you know, if you look at Kubik, if you look at Caffey, sort of players that hadn't yet really firmly established themselves at the beginning of the year, like firmly, they've just been getting better and better. Of course, Hames is getting better. Somehow Stivrens is getting better. Lexi Sun seems more comfortable. They just look like, you know, if the goal is how do we get these folks playing better come tournament time, it looks pretty good. I mean, it looks like they've done that. Let's look ahead. If Nebraska wins this, they have Penn State or Texas who plays tomorrow. But I think an interesting thing to watch on the other side of the bracket. So Nebraska does that. Then if they get into the if they kind of keep rolling, they could end up facing Wisconsin in the Final Four. But Wisconsin has to play BYU. And it's a 1-16. I get it. But it's kind of weird. They had to shift it because of BYU's religious beliefs. It was supposed to be tomorrow. They moved it to Saturday. And BYU comes out of a pretty obscure conference, has played Pac-12 teams really well. That's a tough 1-16 matchup for Wisconsin.
It is. And when they released the bracket, you know, Wisconsin's kind of a head above, I think, everybody in the tournament, at least based on what we know from them, you know, not playing a full season, but their numbers look it. And that was one that jumped out to me because BYU is a team that's lost once. I'm forgetting who beat them.
UCLA got them. So did like GCU at one point, but I think it was sort of like a exhibition type thing.
Yep. But you're right. They play Pac-12 competition all the time. You know, it's a program that has a history of volleyball success. So I do think that is a little bit of a tricky matchup for Wisconsin. I would expect the Badgers to come through that. But I'll also be surprised if they don't get tested a little bit. And then, you know, assuming they get through that, they're looking at either Ohio State or Florida. I'm gonna take Ohio State there. They're playing at a really high level, but yeah, Nebraska, Wisconsin in the Final Four would be. I think everyone would sign up for that. Finally, get to see those two teams play, and obviously you have last year's history where the Badgers took all of the matches against Nebraska and knocked them out of the tournament.
Based on Wisconsin, Nebraska in 2021 and 2020. We may just still be dreaming about a Nebraska-Wisconsin matchup because Wisconsin's been COVID-prone. There, I said it. Sorry.
It's true.
Yet to play them. Vogues, what else you got coming up this weekend before we say goodbye?
Yeah, working on so we'll have Derek Peterson and Greg Smith will be at today's practice for us. So we'll have some stuff coming up from that. We'll have volleyball, hopefully for another full week. But we'll see. Jacob always does a great job with that. And then our April issue goes to press next Wednesday morning. So putting the finishing touches on that. So excited for people to get to see that.
All right.
Can you do it might be too late, but a double truck on Omar Manning's calves?
That Kranach wants signed pictures of his calves today.
I'm glad you said it now because we don't have that image on file. But I can ask John Peterson, our great staff photographer, to go looking for that today.
Here's the thing, dude. Just take a panoramic of the stadium. As long as Manning's in it, his calves will pop out. I'm just saying. Just look for him. You guys laugh.
Is that gonna replace the Wonder Mons picture in your bathroom?
It could. I'm just saying. Yeah, that'd be actually a really good little sequence there. Wonder Mons, Fro, and then Manning's caps.
Yes, yeah, why not? Vogue, you be good. We're sorry today.
He looks like he bought the strength shoe.
Right.
Remember that thing from East Bay?
Yeah. That always helped. Vogue, you take care. He's gonna lose his phone is what he's gonna do.
Yeah, we spent a combined 20 minutes this morning talking about food and Omar Manning's calves.
It's okay.
Well, they are meaty.
Bang. All right, it's time to check in with the Iron Horse. Gary Sharp with us. AL Varsity Radio Weekend Edition continues. We're presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranach.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7 1/2 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Wind down a weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Find us on Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, and we welcome in the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, with us. Sharpie, how's it going? Good to spend time with you. What's new?
Good morning, boys. Do you think there are people tailgating ahead of a practice? You can't go to games, but you can go to a practice.
You know, I look outside now. It is cold. It is damp. I'm going to say yes. Somebody somewhere has a red beer or a Bloody Mary, and there's a Fairberry brand or even maybe some eggs on a stovetop or a grill somewhere down by 10th and Vine. I will say yes.
Well, I think people will be excited, you know, this Saturday and in 2 weeks to get back in the stadium, see some live football. This is a unique thing that Nebraska is doing, but I like it. Hopefully it becomes an annual thing. I know it's a lot about recruiting, but it's also, you know, these guys are going to play before the most people they played before since 2019, which is pretty cool. So who knows what you'll see today, but I like the idea, and I think it's been embraced really well.
Well, and Nebraska will pull it off, and I'm excited for the fans. Gary, what do you think happens today? How many folks you think show up today?
Well, I think you'll get between 3,000 and 4,000. I know it's they wanted 4,000. I don't think they got 4,000. But I think there'll be a good smattering of people there. I hope people keep what they're watching in context, that it is a practice and they're not going to show you much. This is a good day to, like, for all of us, media included, to check out what guys look like. What's the difference about Adrian Martinez besides his size? You know, some of the new guys, the wide receivers, Gabe Irvin, some of the guys on defense that have to build depth. I think there's certain things to take out, but they're not going to put on a full display of, showing you behind the curtain. But I think they'll do enough that you get a feel of why this staff has and players have some optimism this spring.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Look, what about that, the sort of iron curtain that exists in most programs where they don't let you watch any prep? Like, really, what's the harm? I mean, honestly, is it that Wisconsin's going to discover that, ooh, they throw an out route? Whoa, they do a post pattern. Like, what are you really hiding there? Do you think it's overblown, and do you think they should open up access, considering there's been so little, even more so than they already are?
Well, I mean, there's, coaches by nature are, they're very secretive. They're always very leery of who's looking and who's recording and who's taking notes. And some just don't want, things that they do in practice are not normal. That kind of stays behind closed doors, whether how they run a practice, how they talk to their team, those kind of things. There are some coaches we've seen, I know more in basketball, that they've always had an open practice. Anybody that wants to come can come and watch. I think football is a little bit different because, it's got the feel of a cloak and dagger. But one thing, more practices used to be open around here, and then people started reporting things, and you went, uh-oh. And so things got closed down a little bit. I think if coaches are confident in their team and what they're doing and that it won't bother practice having people in the stands, you may see those programs open their practice a little bit more. But I guess I don't have a problem with it because the most important thing is getting work done. I think some coaches also, to finish this thought, some coaches feel that when you have open practices and you have a lot of people there, you have media there, that you can't get your work done, that people are thinking about the people that are there watching them during practice when they're trying to run all these different drills and do things that are kind of unorthodox that you wouldn't do on a Saturday.
Gary Sharp's with us on Hail Varsity Radio, weekend edition. Sharpie, I want to go to the running backs, and there's been a lot said about Gabe Irvin. It'll be fun to see what he does today, again, and to your point, within context. That said, are you expecting, who are you? Who else are you expecting to see carry the ball here, not only today but moving forward? Do you feel okay that by the end of spring there'll be some okay options to carry the football?
That's a good question. I mean, we don't know. I think there's two things. You think about the angst with Brendan Hymus opting out of his last game. Actually, it's going to pay off for Nebraska because Turner Corcoran got to start his career earlier than expected as a starter. Then you look at Marquis Stepp with an injury. that opens the door for more people to get opportunities. And it's a position where you don't know who's healthy and from day to day who's going to be able to suit up, except for this guy from Georgia who showed up with a lot of accolades and has grabbed it and run. And from people that have watched him every day since he's been on campus, it just isn't, hey, he's the only healthy running back from day to day. He's the real deal. I mean, you can't win a job fully in the spring, but he's a guy that's on the radar, and I think you might as well pencil him in for some carries on August 28th. He's really, really good. Now the problem is, who are his running mates? Who's going to be healthy? You know, who's going to be healthy today? Are we going to see Scott? Are we going to see Tompkins? Are we going to see Ramir Johnson? Are we going to see Savion Morrison? Because the thing to consider in two more weeks when spring ball is over, you might have a little attrition out of that room. I can't imagine that amount of running backs are going to stay at Nebraska just from the standpoint of, you know, I mean, they're not having four or five running backs on the field, so someone's probably going to go. But, boy, how do you make that determination? Because you don't know who's going day to day.
Yeah, if not two guys. There's no question. You just have to, it's too much of a logjam back there. What do you think is a good – I've been trying to come up with a good comp for Gabe Irvin just based on the high school film that I watched. And walk with me here. I couldn't think of a specific one player. I would say you take Terrell Davis and you combine him with Tiki Barber. Just in terms of comp, I think that's maybe the best way to describe Irvin. Like, he's a forward momentum guy. He's quick yet subtle movements, good pad level, good stride. He looks like he runs sort of like a typical professional yep. running back, if that makes any sense.
Yep. You know what? I will give you another name. And I agree with what you're saying. What about Brandon Jackson?
That's the name I thought of.
I like it, but Brandon had special feet, though, man. Those things were, come on now. But Brandon was like, oh, man. He was like,
he was an NFL draft pick. But I think what you're going to see, if you like watch him a little bit, the way his running style, that's what I thought of right away. You know, he's got a ways to go to be an NFL guy. But I think in terms of a style, that was the comp that popped in my head.
Gary, everyone's talking about Gabe Irvin, but the name of, you know, 2-3 weeks ago was Marquis Stepp. We now know that he's out for the spring. How much do you think that's going to hurt? I mean, I think a lot of Husker fans, me included, were expecting Marquis Stepp to be the starting running back come, what's the date we start on? August 28th. Everyone expecting Marquis Stepp to be running back number one. Do you think that's still going to be the case now that he's missed a full spring?
I don't know. Guys, I think that's an injury that you have to pay close attention to. Anytime a running back has a foot injury or a history of foot injuries, whether it's a light injury or a severe injury, I think you have to pay close attention. And, you know, when he's healthy, he's pretty dynamic and explosive. But, man, there's too many cases of him at USC where he wasn't healthy. And that's actually, you know, you were counting on him to grab the RB1 spot. Irvin steps in and you're like, okay. I think Stepp will be back at some time during the summer, but we got to keep a close eye on that injury. And it's unfortunate that he's not able to go through spring to get a feel for this system and so that the lineman can get a feel about what kind of a running back he is. But keep a close eye on it. And Nebraska needs him. Now, you know, and the other part of this is you got to need for him a little bit more because you don't have to worry about waiting to see if he's going to be eligible because of the one-time transfer. He's good to go right now.
Sharpie, I want to go there with you to the one-time transfer. And college football coaches have had to adapt and deal with the COVID year where there was a free pass. Now it's in ink and dry. College basketball has dealt with this for a little while longer, a little bit better, just due to the one and done, and you had more transfers, smaller roster. You know, how do you anticipate Nebraska thriving with this? How do they be better at it than either Big Ten peers or other regional options? Can they turn this into a positive?
Well, I think you have to have a strategy to win the portal, and you have to separate basketball in the portal is entirely different from football. Because think about football, and I'm okay with the one-time transfer. I'm okay with the freedom, but it's a two-way street. You have to be able to say, I want my freedom, but I might get hurt. There's not a home for all of these players that are in the portal, and there could be more processing going on with coaches, with their roster, if you're not, you know, living up to expectations. You look at the portal in college football, it's really quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers that are in the portal that, so to speak, fall up. There aren't many guys that have left Nebraska that have fallen up. So you leave Nebraska and you go to a program that's above Nebraska. The first couple of years of activity with football in the portal, it just seems like it's quarterbacks that benefit the most. Where, you know, a Jack Cohen can leave Wisconsin and he goes to Notre Dame and he might actually play this year. You know, things like that, are guys better their opportunities. Even a Patrick O'Brien goes from starting at Colorado State to Washington. He might go to the NFL now because he's at a place that, you know, has got a history of NFL quarterbacks. I think from Nebraska's standpoint, you might see him do this. You know, you can't burn any bridges recruiting if you lose a guy. You got to stay in contact, you know, keep that relationship open because you never know. But I wonder if moving forward, Nebraska and other schools will not get to 85 scholarships, and they'll keep a couple of scholarships open just in case. You know, somebody that you've recruited in the past that fits a position of need pops open like a wide receiver at the last moment, and you've got a spot for him. I could see that, but I don't think it's going to be a huge game changer in college football. I think it's more on the college basketball side. But there will be those cases, and Nebraska will see that when they play against Oklahoma, and they got Gray from Tennessee is in their backfield. You know, you get those kind of cases. But I think for the most part, you try and win the portal, and you don't try and have anybody go into the portal where you go, oh my, that was a surprise. You could say this year, depending on what happens with Stepp and depending on where Torrey is going and what Kentucky does with Wandale, Nebraska might be a wash in the portal. And you remember, you lost a couple of names that were significant in your offense the last year.
Gary, do you think that the lack of culture talk, there's been some, do you think the lack of it means that the culture is finally right?
Well, I hate that word. I mean, I think if we're in year four and we're still talking about that, there are some major issues. But I know what you're saying, Mark. I think that's it's either guys are cognizant of people don't want to hear about that, or it's been established and you don't have to bring it up. I think even when Deontay Williams last week was talking about turning down a bowl bid and he talked about getting the culture right, I don't think that's what he meant. I think they're in a better spot now, but we won't know until you get squeezed when the season starts and what happens and who's with you and who's not. But I'm glad that that has not been a topic. It's been more football stuff here in the spring.
Gary Sharp's with us, Weekend Edition, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, your takeaway with just kind of how some of the peers have been responding to questions about some of their teammates, and I'm talking about DBs and their thoughts on the receiving core. What do you take away from that? And also just kind of your read on the backup quarterback race.
Well, let's first start with teammates talking about teammates. I think anytime spring or fall that a player brings up a teammate unsolicited, you need to listen a little bit closer because they weren't led into a question. They're talking about their team, they're talking about positions, and then if they bring up a player, that usually means that player is doing something very impressive that would bring up like a defensive back talking about a particular wide receiver. So that's something I always listen to in the spring to see when guys are talking, and then all of a sudden out of the blue they'll bring up a name, and you have to go, oh, okay. Oliver Martin must be having a really, really good spring. There's another guy that is I really want to watch today. I think the backup quarterback job is really interesting because I think people need to be a little concerned about that spot. This is it's an important day for Logan Smothers to look good. I don't know how much live activity quarterbacks will have on the spring game. You know, Ohio State's not doing any tackling today. I wouldn't want Martinez getting hit in a spring game, but, you know, Smothers hasn't played in an organized football game in a long time. You'd like him to be live. I think what has surprised them, guys, is Harburg. I think they knew what they had in Harburg in a big boy arm, but I think they are very impressed by his football IQ and how he's been able to get down the offense enough that he doesn't look completely lost in the spring. And that's kind of thrown into the mix of, wow, it's not a foregone conclusion that Logan Smothers is running away with the quarterback two job. We might actually have a competition. But what has to happen is those guys, include Masker, they have to be consistently good, because I think Martinez has made strides. But, boy, if you go into this season and you still are kind of unsure about the backup, and that just forces your hand to go find another body in a transfer portal or a junior college, I don't know. We'll see. I think that's important in the spring game, to see those backup quarterbacks have success and be able to throw the ball where you could at least say, oh, okay, if they're pressed into a game, at least they're not going to be, you know, a complete mess.
Sharpie, we'll end it with some baseball thoughts. A little dicey for a bit last night, and then another five-run crooked number seventh for Nebraska. Important to get a win. Obviously take two out of three. Best case, you sweep, but with Nebraska baseball. What a weird spot for them to be in last night, and I guess it's still kind of COVID 2020, 2021, but I mean, we're talking nobody there. It's cold. It's dreary. It's Happy Valley, right? They don't play that well.
It's a terrible camera angle.
Right. I mean, it looks like Will Bolt, you know, era footage, pre-HD, and Nebraska found a way to get it done. I was impressed. You know, we were kind of bumping around last night. We're listening to it. Went and got some food with some friends, and then, oh, bang, they scored a ton. They're going to kind of walk away with this thing, and they did. But they, I guess the best way to put it is they continue to surprise, even though they are really good. I think this is a good baseball team.
Well, they haven't dropped games where you go, oh, they're winning series, which is important, and they're finding ways to win, and especially late game. And, you know, that was one of those games last night where they were playing well and they had opportunities to open up the game. But they just couldn't hit with runners in scoring position. But their pitching was keeping them in a game. And then they took advantage of some wildness by Penn State and were able to open up the game and cruise to a nice win. I think that's just kind of how they are. They're gritty. They hang around. They fight you for nine innings. And if you're not in it to win it for nine innings and you're playing Nebraska, you're going to be very surprised. And they are, you know, every day I don't know that they surprise me. I think that's just who they are. They're gritty. They play hard. They play smart. And they're going to find a way, and they're going to play all nine innings. And, you know, when one area of their team isn't playing well, like last night not hitting with runners in scoring position, leaving guys in key opportunities on base, they still have the pitching going. So the game doesn't get sideways on them. They're a good team. I don't know that they're a great team, but they're in first place in the Big Ten. And right now, if you sit there for a while, you might host a regional. Who knows? I know, you know, the NCAA likes storylines, and I see a lot of the mock brackets, you know, 5-6 weeks out. Mm-hmm. Nebraska is the number two seed going to Fayetteville. Wouldn't you like to have Will Bolt against Dave Van Horn?
I think that'd be awesome. I don't know.
No, not yet.
Well, I mean, Arkansas, and Elijah, you just saw him last weekend. You just saw Arkansas miss, but I know the matchup would suck, but the storyline and the lineage would be incredible. I mean, Will and Dave would not like it because they care about one another, but man, we'd all eat it up. It'd be cool.
Well, I think first and foremost, we would eat it up because Nebraska is back in a regional, mm-hmm. and as a number two seed playing a conference-only schedule. But, yeah, going down to Baum Stadium to take on the Razorbacks to try and get to a super, not so much.
Not at all. Sharpie, we will see you a little bit later today, bud. Have a good rest of your weekend.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for letting me come on and talk about practice.
No, I love it,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, hey, be on the lookout for Omar Manning's calves,
see,
by the way.
Cranach made requests.
Do I have time here? Well, quick one. Either one of you, quick response. What should Omar Manning be?
He should be your co-number one wide receiver. I mean, he should be a big-time threat playmaker.
Calf model.
See you guys later today.
Cranach,
the receiver thing doesn't work out.
Do you want black and white artsy photo, or do you want like just beautiful bang, wow, full color pop photo?
His calves overcome all filters, so okay. It doesn't matter.
Cranach, stay weird. We love you. We'll talk to you next weekend.
Godspeed, sir.
All right.